6:30. Seeing no public members, no public participation. Did you guys get a chance to look at the minutes? I think they're pretty straightforward. There's no objections. We can approve the minutes. Any objections? As a refresher, we just kind of met to go over the format last time. I'm thinking today is we can actually go through and look at where the budget sits today. As an update, there are some things in this that are not done, but the vast majority of it is complete. The things that aren't done today are just simply timing issues, grants being the biggest thing. We still are working with ISB to get our grants approved. I don't like to put all that work into the budget until we get a little, some type of feedback from the state saying, yeah, what you guys want to do is acceptable and we're going to let you do it because it's double work. Typically, that's consistent with what's happened here in the district. In fact, last year, one of the things I would point out, there are some differences from the starting point of this budget and the ending point of last year's budget. And the differences that I'm aware of, there are two that are material, and that is grants. So at this time of the year, it's very early to predict what our full year grant amount is going to be for different things. For instance, Title I is the biggest one. You know, we don't know exactly what dollars we're going to get from Title I. So I have to produce the budget with what we know today. And then when we get any type of additional allotment from ISB, we go in and we have to amend our title application budget pages for the grant. And then after that's amended and approved, then I actually go into Skyward and put that in there so we can spend to those accounts. So that's where you'll see a difference from last year's final product to the beginning of this year is those grant dollars that have been added to the budget during the year. So no changes to, you know, non-grant things except for some, you know, occasional budget shifts where if somebody has you know, a budget of say $10,000 in a couple buckets and they need to shift them between the buckets, you know, that's a budget transfer. Those will happen, so you'll see some dollar amounts change, but the overall dollar doesn't change. But the grant dollars do change things.
Just quick, just make sure I understand. So here, I think this is maybe a final draft of last year. So are you saying the FY 2019 revenue where it says $54 million, and then here in our proposed budget, fiscal year 19 revenue budget, $56 million. Is that the difference? Is that what you mean?
No, that difference. So let's look at that right now. So the page you're looking at is that summary page.
Right.
If you flip the printout I just gave you, it's right there.
Oh, okay.
The revenue on this section, you have to add the transfer. So in this example, you would add like the 55,168 for expenditures, kind of located in the middle of the page. And I can project this if you think it's easier to follow.
Yeah,
along.
Is that okay?
Maybe I'll just point that.
I'm just
yeah,
trying to follow.
Here, we'll do it this way. So right here, you know, in the middle of that page is the expenditure total. Well, you need to add that number plus the $3.1 million together. And I did it over here. That's what this is doing. You know, and then that number, 58,319,394, if I go to the summary page, you will see that's my expenditure number right there. Follow me or did I lose you?
Oh,
so again,
when you say grant dollars, it's not a revenue, it's an expense.
Grants are, when I'm saying grant, and that's not what we're talking about here, that's just, you're looking at a summary. What I'm talking about in the grants is separate from here. So I'm talking like Title I. Title I is a grant we get. And for instance, we get, I'm going to show you here an example of what I'm talking about. So I have not updated this for this year, but we had, you know, these four grants. This is Title I, Title II, this is LIPLEP, and this was a Title IV grant, which was really strange to me. I don't know why we got that. But these amounts up here, what I do in the budget, and this is just a worksheet that I don't even print out for this because you need to have a conversation to understand it, is at the time of the budget, and this is for FY19, so I haven't even updated it for this year because I don't have these numbers, but at the time I issued the budget, we had $262,000 as our expected Title I grant. So then I did expenditures, which matched that, and here we go, right down there. So within the budget document and all the individual account codes, you'll see revenue and expenses net to zero because it's a grant. You know, if you're going to give me $100,000 in a grant, I'm going to show you I'm going to spend my $100. So that's what I did for all of these grants. What I'm saying is, since the time that I have to do this budget is before these grant dollars are finalized, you know, this 262 number ended up being, we can look at it right now, more than that. Ended up being, actually it ended up being $359, and we have not gotten our final payment yet. But my point is, the budget that is right here reflects the new revised number, whereas originally this was $262,000. Now it's $359 because that was what we learned that the Title I grant ultimately ended up being. So we increase our revenue to match that, and I also increase my expenditures, so the net effect is zero. But that's just why you'll see a different number on here. That's all I wanted to explain. Does that make sense?
Okay, it's not like you pull stuff from a different part of the budget to spend that money.
It's simply, if the bar is set, here's my revenue and here's my expense, and they are exactly equal, which is what they have, what I'm showing you back here on this worksheet that I don't print out, this is the check down here. You can't see them, but this is my check. This is basically the revenue up top balance to my expenditures right here, and they hit zero.
Do we get a...
Should I do the same thing?
I don't remember, but do we approve a revised budget, or it didn't go up to the point where you have to revise
your
budget?
We don't do a revised budget for grant spending. Okay. That just isn't something anybody... Because every school district in the state would have to do it for that reason alone. They've never done it here. I've never done it. I don't have any colleagues that do it. I know some people do it. And that's, we should talk about that quickly so the Finance Committee is aware of this. It's a decision that some of my colleagues make, and they do an amended budget in, let's say, May or June at the end of the year, so that when their auditor comes in, their budget to actual comparison is almost 100% in every bucket. For me, I think that's cheating. It really is. Like, if you want to see what the district is doing, look how they prepare their budget and forecast their spending for the year and see if they're doing it well. That's what the budget is supposed to illustrate. What happens when you amend your budget at the end of May or June, all you're doing is undoing all that advanced thinking and then just after the fact going in and plugging in the numbers. So that's why I don't do it. A lot of people don't do it that way. Some people do. But I don't have anybody that does it solely to address grant funding, because grant is always lagging. Like this year's worse than any I've ever experienced, where we haven't put anything back.
So, and as far as the grant, and you have an account for that that's kept track on Skyward, so whatever you get, really, is you're just spent, basically.
Yeah, so the grant...
So I guess at the end of the day, I'm just trying to understand. So what this tells me, then, is the grant dollars is going to be different than what's assumed in this budget, but then the net is
zero.
That's zero, no matter what.
Correct.
Okay, so then if I'm someone who then goes back to, in next year, like July next year or something, and I go and try to look in here where the grant dollars are, it may not match what the actual is. Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Because at the time of this, like, it's July 31st, and I have to be done with this. And I might not get those answers until the end of August. And I hope I get them by the end of August. So that's just one difference I wanted to point out. The other difference, and this is one that I thought was interesting, we also, if you recall, Linda, we added one position last year. What was the title of the position? It was Myra Rojas. She was somebody we added to, I think, Churchill. Let me look her up real quick.
Yeah. Is it like a grade five or something? Is it title? Are you talking about a Title One?
Reason I mentioned, the reason we added her was because it was a position that was board approved to meet, I forget what the need was, but it happened after the budget was produced. So what I'm getting at is that was, if you look at the FTE count for FY19, you'll see it's actually 0.5 more than what was presented last year. So last year was 443.24. And now it's 443.74. The difference is twofold. Myra Rojas was a 1.0 FTE increase, which would bring us up 1.0 FTE. That happened back in the fall. And then I found in doing this year, I had one aide as a 1.0 and she was a 0.5. Mm-hmm. So we had a part-time aide. So basically I was 0.5 off last year and then we added one person. So our beginning number is 0.5 higher. You guys follow that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which brings me to the next, just the update is, you know, on page one of this budget, it shows the change in FTE is now at 7.2. If you recall, the tentative budget shows it at 8.19. So the reason we went down one person and one 100th is I found that I had a nurse as a 0.99. I had her 0.33. She's got to be 0.34 in one of them. So that's why it was set to round it off to 100, which is driving me crazy. So that's why it should have been 8.2. Now it's 7.2. The reason it went down one is we're not hiring the behavioral specialist FTE position over at Churchill. So that's why that has been removed from the budget, but it technically is still in the budget because to meet those needs, we're going to purchase services through CASE. They're actually able to hire the person, and it costs us less money to purchase the service through CASE for what we need. So that's
Wait,
the
so
FTE update.
So, okay. So we're really not hiring, but you said, okay, I see. But
so
it's,
we're not hiring
really
a staff
budget,
member,
so
but
I
we
see.
Still have that need to meet. So we're going to meet that need by a purchase service through our special ed.
So it's still an expense.
It's an expense.
But we're not putting out a
it's
staff
not
member.
Correct. So that was kind of the beginning of the document updates I wanted to talk to you guys about. If you want to go through, we can kind of actually go through some of the assumptions. Stop me whenever you want.
Well, could we just real quickly, I'm still trying to digest all the format stuff, right? So we're still waiting on money coming in from property taxes. I'm looking at the current year 19.
Let me stop you. One more thing I forgot to tell you, and this is probably the most important thing. So I have activity in here. You can see the FY19 actual. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah.
That's from our general ledger as of June 30th.
Okay.
Understand that we have two things that have to happen. This is unaudited. So what that means is all of the bills that I paid in July, almost all of them or most of them should be in here.
Okay.
But they're not in here because they are paid in July and I can't go and pick July expenses and say this is FY19, this is FY20 and do that manually and put them in here. So that's why this is an unaudited activity.
Okay.
So that's why it looks kind of goofy, especially with property taxes. Now, property taxes are one that FY19 was a really unique year in that, and we talked about this briefly, is so if you think back to the fall of 2018, people advanced paid taxes because of the tax change.
Oh, right, yeah.
That drastically influenced what we received in spring taxes in 2019, right? Or maybe I'm a year off. There's maybe December of 17 and the spring of 2018, that's what it was.
Okay.
So that drastically impacted our tax receipts. So there are some considerable audit adjustments that happened because we defer taxes. So what I'm getting at is twofold. A, this is our general ledger on a cash basis as of June 30th. We do modified accrual on our AFR, so when the auditors come in, they're gonna move some of those expenses back in. And the same same thing, they're going to move some expenses that are in our cash basis GL out of the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some crossover amounts that will change these. So
this is just, this is what you're saying, it's a running total sort of a thing, and it gives you a general view, but it's not professional, it's been all audited.
That's exactly right. And I would even take it one step further to say, you know, if you look at, you know, any of the schools or even the general revenue, you know, when you look back at the actual for FY17 mm-hmm. and FY18, those are going to be accurate numbers because those are the input after the audit and adjusting audit entries. FY19 is always going to be a cash basis. So it's a little bit of an accounting nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because but there's no better way to do it. The only other way to do it is to not show any FY19 activity and just say, I can't give it to you because it's not audited yet, but the budget's due before our audit's done.
I was just wondering if we can make it more clear by saying it's audited for actual FY17, 18, and then just make it clear the actual FY19 being.
So maybe, that might be something in the FY19 actual. Maybe put unaudited in there or cash basis.
I'd almost not want to call it actual because it's not the actual yet until it's actually been right. So it's sort of like I'm trying to think of a good word, but it's really the running total or the you know.
And I think that's how I see it. I'll see it in financial reports or something. I'll say audited, or we could say
maybe just FY19 unaudited activity.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, I don't know.
Or activity to date or something like that. Or
Or year to date. You can just do FY19 year to date.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's truly what it is.
That's probably the best thing to do. Then I could just do YTD and it'll fit in my calendar.
Right, exactly.
Right. Really do reformatting.
You don't know how hard it is to get to print on paper.
My brain is hurting
right now. Right.
18 minutes into
this. Right. So, then the bigger question I have, well, that's not a bigger question, but. If it really just gives you a gross approximation of how things are doing. So how do you keep track during the year of how we're doing? Like, you know, are we blowing the budget or, like, here we are, you're saying as of the end of June, right, there's about $2 million left to spend.
Yep.
And about $2 million left to, no, about a half a million dollars left to come in. Right.
So two things we do there. That the most important being the expenditure side.
Right.
And encumbrances.
Yeah.
You know, so again, when somebody puts in money, so let's say you're a department head and you want to buy a widget.
Yeah.
Well, if you go in to put a requisition in and you've already encumbered your entire budget,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get denied.
Right.
So that's the control. I think to your point, that stops overspending on the expenditure side.
Okay.
So that's in place. Obviously, that doesn't apply to salary and benefits, but salary and benefits is the thing that I'm going to toot my own horn at. If you look at this, we're like within a third of a percent.
Okay.
Like, because the way this format works is it does every person's salary, every person's benefits. I literally updated election changes effective 7/1, so this should be the only thing in here that shouldn't be 100% accurate is going to be new hires that haven't made elections yet, because we do have a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
We have vacancies that haven't made elections yet, so I have to do an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I estimate single coverage for the first three people, and then I throw a family coverage in. Mm-hmm. You know, just something to kind of get us in the right ballpark.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So running in the year then would be, let's say we have somebody who leaves, mm-hmm. and we have to fill that position.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a variance on what your budget was, either higher or lower, depending on what.
Absolutely will be, and that's what happens. So that's why, you know, I go back to Paul laughing at me when I talk about this. You know, it's important to look at the budget as a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
This is not what's going. This will not be accurate to the penny.
Oh ever. Right, no, I understand.
This is the best guess that we can make right now, based on our staffing and our expenditure expectations to where we're going to be
right.
So.
And just to answer your. Or I think might answer your question, Ted, is I look at that monthly expense
mm-hmm.
That's in our board packet, and it kind of gives you percentage spent,
mm-hmm.
and then last
year,
the previous years, year to date, and all that stuff, so it kind of gives you an idea of, like, where you are
okay.
in a year.
All right.
So
yep.
it's all, like, expense revenue expense.
Yes, the revenue expense summary monthly or something. It's a board report, which they're great, but it's helpful to monitor it that way. But yeah, so taxes are different. You know, like I said, this is going to be, I think, probably an outlier year where there will be some adjusting entries because of those substantially different early taxes in May of 2018. But it's also one where DuPage is very consistent. Mm-hmm. So I don't get tax payments throughout the year, whereas in Cook County, I would get them every month. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard to track in Cook because it's like, oh, man, I'm supposed to get, you know, 55% of 98% of my previous levy in April. Well, mm-hmm. DuPage is very consistent, with the exception of the last year. So we don't track that. The one other aspect, I guess, if we want to flip into revenue, we can kind of go over that now. Or actually, let's not get there. I'll get there in a second. So flip to page 4. This is one ask you guys had. It's on the backside. This chart of the education fund expenditures. I expanded the key on the bottom to try and give it a little more room. Totally open for suggestions and modifications there. Again, I'm following what gets reported and summarized on our AFR on how I kind of group these. I'm just trying to give a description there so it's more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
I think we only had kind of three of them last time.
Okay. Under school administration, is principal supposed to be PAL?
Yeah, autocorrect. That's what I'm going with.
Like, so if it's following the AFR, then these are kind of, I don't know, not defined term, but like whatever
they're standardized. So okay. When I say it's following the AFRs, I'm referencing the function.
Yeah.
So I figure out what function generally is reported in this manner on the AFR, and that's what I've done here. And if you recall, this is a carryover from many years prior in this district. That's how this is. This is one of the charts, actually, that was used that I kept in this new format. And I did that for consistency's sake, for comparative analysis. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to look back 5 years, or 3 years, or 7 years, I think they're actually out there and you can find this table. That was my plan there.
The mix of fonts in that table is bothering me. Sorry.
So which one? Just the top to the bottom, or this one alone?
There's a mix of times. That's Calibri on the right,
but
Roman on
the
left.
You're scaring
me. Man, you have some. That's impressive. All right, let's change your
Which one you gonna pick?
I don't know, and I don't want to change my.
Whoa!
I like everything else looks like it's Calibri, so I.
What?
That is attention to detail that far surpasses me.
Yes.
Well, I started looking at these nicely lined up columns of numbers, but the totals were in a different font than the lines above them.
Right now I gotta change my margin.
Oh, sorry. Sorry to be picky.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
See if it still prints on one page. No.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to screw that up. Get a line to the lead or something somewhere.
I think it's okay.
Oh.
All right.
I spend my whole day pushing things by one or two pixels on a screen.
So your eye finds that.
Yes.
You were able to define what they were. Not only say that they were different, you knew what they were.
That's crazy.
Sorry. All right. Sorry to show everyone up what a geek I am.
That is my top margin.
I didn't want to get too far off top.
Okay, so anyhow, that was, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yes.
Thank
good.
You.
Then we can flip. I think this is where I was intending, just to kind of walk you through the revenue section.
Oh, I'm sorry, to show quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's worth, and it's totally up to you, to say that this is defined by, you know, AFR or whatever it is. I'm sure people will have questions. That's why I think of these kind of stuff, but it's totally up to you.
I think that would probably confuse people.
Okay.
Because they're not going to...
I don't know.
I mean, so we'll see. It'd be a good one to see if I get anybody ask that question.
Okay.
Next to the revenue section, I have repeating titles now, so you flip the page, you can actually see the title line is on there again, whereas in last year's I didn't have like the account number, account name, budget, actual, that kind of stuff. So that's
really nice, though.
That's an improvement for sure.
That's why
Finance Committee recommendation. Give you guys credit for that one. But again, you tell me if you guys think it's worth to kind of walk through some of the detail in here and the decision to set budgets at where they are. The property taxes is straightforward. Even CPPRT is one that I would consider very much straightforward. Conservatively, I'm keeping that down just because that's where the state has indicated repeatedly that in order to meet the evidence-based funding mandate, they're going to steal out of somewhere. Well, this is where they're going to steal. So that's, we got a little more than I expected this year. I don't want to get excited and think I'm going to get that next year, so I'm keeping that a little low. Tuition one, which is lower because we don't have any special ed children coming to our district this year that I'm aware of. We did last year. That's why we received $71,000 in revenue. So that budget has fallen off. I don't expect any revenue there. Again, this could be a situation where we have a child move in district or we have a child in our district in one of our programs from another district and we end up generating revenue. But again, I haven't done anything to that. Interest is probably the most interesting one to look at. Flip to page 8. If you recall, our budget for FY 18 was $40,000. I bumped it up in FY 19, and then you can see we far exceeded that. So I'm raising it again.
Which one are we looking at? I'm sorry. I was
looking at interest.
Oh, okay.
It's at the top
of
page 8. This is one where, we had a really good FY 19, obviously, with 1.2 in interest. I don't expect us to get that this coming year for two reasons. Much of this interest is connected to the referendum investments.
Mm-hmm.
Those are being paid out as projects are being completed, so there's less money invested. And additionally, the bond market has turned around.
Mm-hmm.
We have an inverted yield curve, meaning that we're within, you may know better than me, I'd say we're within 8 to 12 months of a recession, and the bond market is going to go down when that happens. So I don't want to get overzealous and expect to get the same thing, and I don't want to budget that way in case it comes
mm-hmm.
short. The next couple sections, again, I'm just looking at trends, and I kind of carry the trend forward. I don't have anything to say that those things are going to substantially or materially change year over year, so I kind of leave them at the same measure. One line I did wanted to point out, and this is one that will be impacted by the audit, and typically is the miscellaneous revenue. It's under the other local revenue, on the top of page 9. Right now, there's a lot of money sitting in there, $134,000. Considered raising that budget a little bit, but that's one where I expect that some of that revenue will be journaled into different buckets, depending on how the auditors feel about it. But that's a very unpredictable thing.
Miscellaneous.
Yeah, it's really things that don't fit into any other defined category. They end up in function 1999, and then the auditors sometimes decide to put it in a different bucket. So just one of the kind of anomalies. State funding. Had one surprise in state funding, and that was special ed transportation reimbursement. Got quite a bit more than I expected. Don't know why. I mean, if you look at our history, we were at 250, we went to 550. So we raised the budget to 380, thinking that is kind of the middle ground, and then we got more. So I've raised the budget quite a bit again to 475. This is a again one that varies year to year. It depends on what the state decides they want to do. Typically, it's more consistent than what we're seeing here. Don't know exactly why it's so variable, but
now, if and I assume we can only spend it on transportation.
Well, what that is that's actually
a reimbursement.
That's a reimbursement.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So we normally spend more than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's okay. Yeah. So again, you're looking at the revenue. When you get back to the actually, it's in the CSO transportation. You'll see that we spend closer to $1 million.
Got it.
But we do get reimbursed on that. Okay. One other line I'm going to point out, just because it's been talked about a lot, is that the preschool for all grant is right in there as well from the state funding. We know that amount is 511, 418, and you can see here on my FY19 actual, which we're going to rename year to date, it's only showing $468,000 being received. That's a good example of how, you know, this is not a complete snapshot for the 12 months. We still have some things in flux.
Right.
This is a reimbursement grant, meaning you don't get the preschool for all money until you put in a receipt that says you've spent it. Okay. So you spend the money, and then I send you the reimbursement. So very typical to see that type of balance in an account like that, where we've spent the money, we haven't gotten the revenue back from the state.
Right. Yeah, I really like calling that year-to-date versus actual.
Yep.
Until it's actually end of the year and it's been audited, and then we...
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree. Federal's pretty straightforward. So that's all the revenue. The next part of the report is the revenue detail. It goes into a little more detail than the summary part you just looked at. Again, the revenue detail section rolls into the revenue part we just went through. So there's no additional information. It's just some of the detail behind the summarized numbers that we were just looking at.
Okay. And then when you get these two line items for general levy, current year and then first prior year, what I forget what that means. That's like the half year part. The two payments?
The first payment.
So you get
it's just the name of it. It's hard to...
This is an iPad.
I know.
Thing. I hate it. Everybody hates it. I think it takes CSBOs about 4 or 5 years to figure out what it means.
Okay.
So it is very typical. It needs to be in there for our auditors.
Right.
And they want us to split it out that way. As you can see in the FY17-18 activity, it all ended up in one bucket.
Right.
Which is wrong.
Okay.
So
I was going to ask why it was like that. There was something else back here that was looked like that. Oh, well, it's the same number transferred over here.
Yeah, taxes are that first prior year and current year is, technically, the first prior year was the money we received, the $18,500,000. That was the money we received in May of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first prior year. And then the current year was the money we received in September.
Right.
I have that wrong. The 19,283 is what we received in September. See, I've got it. No. I got it wrong. 18,526 is what we received in the fall. 19,283 is what we just received in the spring. That is going to actually be part of next year's funding. Got that all straight as
And maybe I'm scrutinizing this too much, but going back to page 7, I'm just looking at the actual revenue numbers, comparing 17 versus 18, about $2 million more, and then it's not quite $3 million less for the budget for 19. What accounts for the variation from year to year there on the property taxes?
Say that again.
Well, if you, it's all summarized here on line 11, 10, in the middle of page 7.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm just trying. One thing I try to do is look for trends, just so I can understand, okay, did something change, or why did it change? And maybe there's no reason figure this out, but looks like it's that bump in 18.
So,
line here, whatever that is.
The best explanation I can give you is the FY18 revenue budget was horrible. We were $2 million over budgeted. So we budgeted way off.
Okay.
So last year, we fixed that for the FY19 budgets. That's why it went to 46, which we expected to be more realistic.
Right.
This year, it's at 47.2 because I'm doing the same thing. We talked about it last time where I'm budgeting, I think, 99.5%.
Oh, no, I understand that part.
Yeah, so that's, if you looked at the trend from 19 to 20, it makes perfect sense, I would say.
Yeah.
That's about this, you know, what you'd expect, actually, with the increment we receive from CPI of a new property and then my decision to not budget 100%.
Right. So that makes sense. I'm just wondering, I mean, this should be the actual amount of money that we got from property taxes for fiscal year 18.
Correct.
And I'm just wondering why there was a 2 million.
Oh, you know what?
A draw.
It would be the bond fund because it went down by $1.7 million. That wouldn't be here. That'd be in Fund 30. Oh, no, it is in Fund 30. It's right up there. Yeah, so from FY18 to FY19, it would go down by the $1.7 million plus.
Oh, yeah.
The $800,000 that was not levied. Well, no, that wouldn't matter. That would be, it's the bond reduction. That was the difference.
Right. The levy increase decision means things are relatively flat.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the first part of that is correct in that the bond taxes that we were collecting went down by $1.7 million.
Okay.
That was the difference.
Okay.
So that's the bulk of it. So 44.5. Yeah, 46. Yeah.
It's so weird that, like, I guess I need to look at the number, right? Because the name doesn't tell me what I'm looking at, right? If I'm looking at the very first line, it has the exact same label as the next one down that starts with 20.
Yeah, so what this is, the page 7 one that you're looking at, is that's giving you the taxes per fund.
Mm-hmm.
Each fund description is the same.
Right.
So you got to look at the very left-hand margin and see, you know, you have two different taxes in the Ed fund,
right.
And then every other fund has one tax.
Right. Okay. All right, so that's where the bump is in 20, right? Not 30. No, that's not right either. It went up between 17 and 18. It's very confusing.
It is really confusing to look at that. I'll have to look at what was going on with the FY18 levy. I mean, the other thing to consider is the amounts per fund can change year to year, and they do change. Like, for instance, you know, typically we had been putting money into the Fund 20, O&M fund, to fund capital spending. You know, as we move forward out of this five-year capital improvement kind of window we're nearing the end on, I'm going to diminish what we put into that fund because we don't need it in there anymore.
All right, it's the top line that's out of sync with everything else for 18.
Yeah, well, should be split between the top two lines.
Right, right, I understand that. So
yeah,
I'm adding up all the top two lines between there, and that's the one that's out of sync.
Yeah, it's higher. Well, it's a good question. I'll take a look at it. But
okay. I just, you know, it's... I thought the way the levy worked was you said, this is how much money I'm going to collect. And that's what you got.
It's very consistent, yeah.
Right, and it's very consistent. It doesn't go down, right? It can stay the same or go up.
Well, it could go down. But
I guess it could go down if you abate.
If we wanted
right.
it to go down, we could.
Right.
But yeah,
we could
it shouldn't be going down.
But I'm just saying historically we haven't made that decision.
Correct.
Right.
So that's good. That is an interesting analysis. I mean, can you look at it? Does that look funny? Let me look and see what was going on in FY18 and why it looks like that.
Okay. Again, I don't know whether I'm supposed to be scrutinizing some of this stuff, but I'm trying to gain an understanding of all these things, right? And this is just how I work as an engineer. I look for trends. And
I like it.
Patterns and things.
Do you guys want to look through the next section at all, or do you want to skip to a school? Because the next section really is the detail below the summary that you just looked at. So it would be that revenue detail section. In fact, there's not a lot more in the revenue detail section than there is in the revenue summary section. But, you know, that exists just to give a little more detail if you wanted to look at any particular area, that's the actual individual account revenue accounts. So we want to flip to Lincoln. This is kind of a representation of what you're going to see in every school. They're all done very consistently. What I could say now is this is, since this was new last year, this is the first time I've had to update it in that format and move to another year. What we found is there are going to be some situations where, let's say I have you budgeted in a particular account, but then you actually get paid out of a separate account. Mm-hmm. So the dollars are right, but in this, you're going to see some budget amounts and actual spends that look a little wonky because we didn't get everything fixed in Skyward. Got most of it fixed, and in fact, the way this budget is created, and actually, if you want to skip to this first big printout, what I do is I actually take an extract out of Skyward that has what we call our position control. So every person in the district is in a bucket, and that's managed under position control. So that position is defined, and then we put a person in it. So the way I do the budget is I have HR fill all the positions that we know, or at least create all the positions that are active in the district. Mm-hmm. They put people in them, and then I take that, pull it down, and then I plop it in here. So this is a mirrored image of what we have in position control. Mm-hmm. This then rolls into these accounts. See, it rolls up into these pages. So in theory, we shouldn't have situations where, you know, Ted's getting paid out of an account stream that's different than this budget, but we still had a couple because this is the first situation, and I think the timing of this, even now as we sit here, I know there are some, you know, potentially some aides that might shift buildings based on student needs. Mm-hmm. So this budget's going to show you a Churchill, but you're going to get paid out of Forest Glen. So mm-hmm. then it's going to look wonky when you look at this, where one building you're underspend, another building you're overspend. So just wanted to kind of communicate that. You do see that. I see it in places in here. Made a lot of effort to clean it up.
But it seems like that particular example is going to be unavoidable.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no way to.
But what we've done is, and I can say this with confidence, is we've taken Skyward from where it was 3 years ago to today and made substantial improvements. I mean, huge changes, because it was nowhere near. If you recall, I don't know if you were here for this, and that's why on the front page, this is a summary, it's not an actual formula on this. Every individual in the district is paid out of the same salary account. Mm. But I don't want to get into how many reasons why that makes me want to scream. But, starting from that point, getting to where we are, and what I expect to happen this coming school year is we're going to be really close. Mm. But there are going to be shifts where people shift buildings that are, you know, not able to capture them right now. So other than that, I think the schools you'll see, they came out really well. I think it was interesting to look at like page 19 in the budget. At the very top in that blue and yellow section, you can look at, you know, budget for FY19 5.1, actual 5.025. That's much closer than we've been in the past. Mm-hmm. It's more in line with what I think is appropriate. And I hope to see as we move forward to that be even more refined.
And what we're hoping doesn't happen, which was not one of the outcomes intended by the building-based is that people start comparing, oh, you spend this much here versus there, because it's so impacted by how long teachers have been, you know what I mean?
Oh, right.
That, you know, you can have a building with more veteran teachers, so it's going to drive that number up.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that you're shorting one building versus the other.
That's right.
You know, but for somebody not knowing what they're looking at, they might
right.
see two different dollar amounts and say, well, why are you spending more money at, you know, Lincoln versus, you know, here?
Yeah.
And there is really no way to control for that because, you know, you can't start moving people around just to even out the salaries. I mean, that, like, is the wrong way to staff buildings, but...
And the per building thing was a state requirement, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And what were they trying to, do you know their motivation for that? I don't want to get too far off topic, but.
Well, there's twofold there. This format was about a board ask. So
oh.
we went this because the board wanted this. They wanted to see per building, per program, what things cost.
Okay.
It just happened to tie in really well with ESSA.
And then now we're required
to.
To
report on this. And it was all based on the equity.
Okay.
They want to be, you know, kind of Melissa alluded to it, they want to be able to say, like, okay, going on 41, you guys are spending $15,000 per kid, and then they can look somewhere else at a different school, and not so much just at the district, now they can go look at individual schools and say, okay, at Abraham Lincoln Elementary, you spend $14,700 per kid, but at Westfield Elementary in District 89, they spend $11,200 per kid.
Right.
That was the motivation for it, I believe. But
you're
that argument is ironclad.
Well, yeah.
Right,
no,
right.
Wait a minute. That just contradicts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Well,
right.
Because I think part of it was to expose inequity issues because
right.
that supports the whole reason why we shouldn't be solely relying on local property taxes because that's not going to fix the issue. But yet, when you break it down by building. The last thing you want then is for people
mm-hmm.
to start moving staff around just based on trying to equalize salaries. You
right.
know
right.
That.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, that right. It's a number that
you have to understand.
Right. That you need to understand what's underneath it
mm-hmm.
because it seems like even within our district, the student population may have different needs.
Absolutely.
Right. And so then you're going to
mm-hmm.
be.
Spending more
right.
per
right.
Or in a district that's growing and building new buildings, it would make sense. You will have more veteran teachers in an existing school than when you open a new school. A lot of places shift around so that it's not a building totally new, but
right.
you're, you know, when you open a new building, you're going to have more new staff. You know, so.
Right. But as far as the equity model, is concerned, like I can see that concern as well.
Yes.
Say, you know, you have a town where larger minority population, right, and all
absolutely.
Of a sudden you go, oh, you're only spending $9,000 per student over here, and you're spending $15,000 per student over here. That would show
yes.
something wrong.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, the site-based reporting was the best thing they could come up with.
Yeah.
And they needed to come up with something. To move forward with the initiative for evidence-based funding.
Okay.
So equity and equality. They needed something, and this was the best they could come up with.
Because
I've talked to Dr. Jacoby at NIASBO quite a bit about it, and it was very difficult to figure out how to get the data to support their drive to fix
mm-hmm.
state funding, because everybody knows it's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, we should not be getting more money than somebody that has, you know, no property wealth in the middle of the state. So you have to figure out a way to do that, and how do you do it?
Yeah.
So this was their best guess.
All right. Well, and it's a work in progress.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this, you know, ESSA reporting, there's a big webinar on it tomorrow because it's due in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've talked to colleagues, and everybody's kind of doing it a little differently.
Mm.
You know, so what's that going to do? If we all do it a little differently, then... data even comparable.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it'd be, I was just going to say that it would be helpful as board members to kind of bring that kind of information forward so we could kind of think about that that's kind of something like, you know, dollar amount per student, whatever the stat might be, that it's not like a simple number that, you know,
right.
those
and
be very helpful.
Right, and especially because it isn't even really per student. You know what I mean?
Oh, no,
because
I
It, and because
facility spending.
Right. But also, like, when you look at, you know, like you had said, some buildings might have more need, but sometimes that need is generated by a relatively small amount of students.
Right.
It drives the per student spending for that building up, but realistically, it's not per student. It might be per 30 students in that building. So the reality is those 30 kids cost significantly more. Not that every student in that building does. So it's
right.
So hard
oh,
to
yeah.
really,
yeah.
you know.
You don't break out that spend.
Right. You know.
You have your 30 expensive kids and
right.
360 that are
right.
more, you know, average spend.
And in a district this size, you never could, because we're small enough that people could
identify,
track it back and figure out almost who you're talking about.
Right.
You know, which is unfortunate, but
right, right. Well, and the other thing is, you don't want to be scrutinizing at that level, because
no.
now all of a sudden there's this. Oh, how do we get rid of that large expense?
Yeah.
Right, which isn't the right thing to do.
No.
I mean,
no.
Either from
the
legal,
would be there, yeah.
right, either from
no.
a legal or
yeah.
an ethical
no.
aspect.
But for
right.
people who don't know that, they see that as an easy. Well, we shouldn't be providing that. They
right.
say, well, we have to. We're
yeah,
the law.
It's
yeah.
the law, right? Exactly.
The government says so. So I would entertain questions on the schools. I think the school district, the individual school budgets are pretty straightforward. They're very consistent. I tried to build them all in the exact same manner. You'll see there are some, as we talked about earlier, there's some grant-funded positions that aren't populated yet.
Okay.
Generally, you know, I keep them in their local bucket right now, unless I know what the grant is going to be.
Now, how do I distinguish those?
Okay, so you
something like it. Is there an
yeah.
example somewhere?
So, let me find one. Grant-funded things are generally the last six digits of the account string. We'll start with the three or four. Let's see a good one.
I don't have my secret decoder ring yet.
Yeah, I know. If you switch to Churchill, I guess it's page 36. At the bottom of page 36, you can see how there used to be a TBI TPE grant. That's now been rolled into.
I'm sorry, can you say again?
It's the bottom of page 36. It's Churchill S&B on the bottom left corner. But that bottom section, you can see there's no people, there's no FTE, because that was this is an older grant funded position, but you can see the last six digits of the account string were 330500.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a state grant that now is part of evidence-based funding, so we had to shift those people out of that grant into local dollars, because they're no longer paid out of that grant. We don't track them that way anymore. So, that's one example. In the middle of that page actually shows a couple of Title I positions. You can see that because it ends in 43,000. Right smack dab in the middle by that vacancy in yellow.
Right, I see that.
I
see. It says Title I right there.
So I've got most of them populated now that I say it. I look through this. But those are ones that, you know, those are the things I'm updating this week, and I will continue to update, and then likely will not be fully updated when the budget has to be finalized.
Okay, so explain this one again to me. All right, we've got these four here. Are those positions that no longer exist?
Those are people that were in positions that we still have.
Yeah.
They're now getting paid for out of a different bucket.
Okay.
Because those positions were typically, in the past, they were paid out of state funds in the TBI, TPI grant,
yeah.
which is the Title III grant.
I see.
Well, that grant was absorbed and now is rolled into evidence-based funding.
Okay.
So now we get the money from the state still, but I don't track it in a grant-funded position. So this was there because last year they were in this.
Okay. All right. So those people are listed somewhere else.
Correct.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah. They're actually in the section right above it, I believe. Yeah. On that page.
Got it. And
so I mentioned that just to kind of illustrate how, you know, this is a fluid document.
Right.
I keep it as updated as I can, but then remember, if I delete that whole section, it's one of the bad things about the nice little format I have. If I delete those five lines in my Excel file, mm-hmm. there's like 30 other spots I got to go eliminate the references. So sometimes I've left, I know this one. Yeah. I left it there because I'm okay with it sitting there. There's no people there. There's no FTEs there. And then right. I have to change all the references because all these amounts to the right are zero.
Yeah. You've used all the space on your page. There's no, there's not a call.
I know.
Comment.
I know. Well, there's, it's funny. It, you know, if we get in here, there's all kinds of notes to the right that don't get printed. So
oh, okay.
I can keep track of that.
All right. So you've got comments, but.
Yeah, there's, yeah. there's notes over here on some of these. But they don't print.
All right.
Maybe the, you know, the next thing I'd say we should put back to just the CSO. CSO, we still have a lot of things.
I'm not familiar with the order.
59. CSO is the last section in here. So CSO is where we still are running a good deal of kind of district-wide expenses through the CSO, so I'll have to create a spreadsheet to meet the needs of ESSA. Mm-hmm. You know, so all of these things that are being paid out of a CSO office actually need to be distributed to a building. And there's instructions on how we do that. Generally, it's a proration based on student attendance. Facility expenses can be prorated based on square footage. Like this, you know, the ESSA reporting thing is going to be cumbersome, but as it stands now, these are generally department budgets that we have historically kept at the CSO level, so that's why we've left them there. So what I will be doing over the next few weeks, separate from the budget process, is you know, creating a tool where I can distribute these dollars that we're spending out of CSO to the buildings. Mm-hmm. Just something to be aware of. It's part of the ESSA requirement.
Yes.
Some districts have taking, for instance, they could take Melissa and charge her to five buildings. So on her paycheck, she'd have five funding streams from five different places that all go to what her paycheck is. Right now, she has one funding stream. So that's a ton of work. I don't know if it's necessary. I don't know anybody that's done it yet to fully disperse their central office spending. It might be the trend that people go to eventually. But you know, in my eyes, that's something I'm going to do in Excel to meet a state reporting need. Mm-hmm. It doesn't impact the overall dollars of the budget or the representation in the budget, so we haven't done that.
And it doesn't really provide any illustration of anything.
No. It's not going to give any more value to the reader than what you see this way. And in fact, I think it's probably more complicated
right.
if you do it that way.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I think it's very confusing
yeah.
to somebody, it, you know, looking at it to try and figure out why they would even push that into.
Yeah. And then if you have something like
0.33
and then it says
0.34. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, before you get in here, we were at the 0.19 and it was driving me crazy. Like, there could not be a hundredth of an employee. So I found out that our nurse that is funded, one of them is funded to three buildings. I had 3-3, 3-3, and 3-3. So that's the challenge you run to because
right.
now you're going to do everybody a 0.2 for everywhere. So, as I mentioned at the tentative budget, we cut about $360,000 out of budgeted line items within the departments. Those are pretty much unchanged right now. There were a few line items that we found that needed to be budgeted. One specifically was professional services staffing for maternity leaves. For instance, we had a social worker leave, and we couldn't get an individual to come in and you know fill that long-term sub position, so we contracted out to a company that provides those people. So that gets booked in here as a purchase service, not a salary.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that budget line item, so I added that. So there are a couple changes in here that have been made. They're all very straightforward. They're illustrated in the same manner as every other account, but
special ed, wouldn't you agree? To me, the expenses can be the most volatile.
Oh, for sure.
All it takes is one mm-hmm. student with significant needs to move in,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
everything changes significantly. So,
for that reason, that I was thinking similarly as we were talking about how it's all split out between schools. For that reason, would it make sense? And I guess maybe this is then goes back to then we can't do it because state mandates now, but. So special ed makes sense to kind of like it be a
central?
It is.
It is.
Well, so for instance, if you here, I'll let you show where it's at on here. We have a
budget.
So if we have an outplaced student, it goes through one line item in CSO, and I will never move that. Like, you have to drag me to the chair before I do that, because what if everybody in this district knows the only outplaced kids go to Forest Glen? You know, and then that just, I think it identifies children in a manner that is just inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, we have, it's in their other expenses down here. Yeah.
Like in a large district where you'd have several students falling into that category, you couldn't really identify the kids, but, you know, here it could come down to a single student.
It's small enough that you could. So we generally, and it's on page 69 under private tuition, we pay all of our outsourced service fees to children that are outplaced under that one line item.
Okay, but then the staffing, though, is still...
Staffing is based on the location, and that, I think, is appropriate because we don't have an abnormal concentration of special ed staff in any of our building. They're all pretty consistent.
Right.
I think Churchill maybe is a little higher just based on their population, but it would be very difficult to come in here and ascertain that without already knowing that. You know what I mean? The other things in here I thought were interesting. Again, we're under on capital spending this year. That's been an area where historically been spending at about 50%. I know there were some June invoices that are going to come back, but at a $1.8 million capital spend budget, we're a little over a million. So we're still kind of high on that budget. As I mentioned earlier this year, when we were talking about this, I don't expect that to be the case next year. I'm looking at page 69 if you want to see where I'm at, but Fund 60, we have budgeted $3.1 million. That's an FQC number. This is going to be the first time since I've been here that we're using construction manager pricing versus architect estimates in the past. Mm. Construction manager pricing is going to be accurate, like within 5%. Architect estimates are proving to be less accurate. So just something to point out. We're actually, I think, at about 60-some percent. We're closer than we've been on capital budgeting just for the year that just ended anyways. And so we're a little better, but we're going to be way better next year.
Right. That was going to be one of my questions. We were talking about page 69, the middle section there? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it looks like we budgeted $18 million. We're spending $11 million, so we're underspending by $7 million.
That's referendum. Let me explain that to you. And I've actually talked to some colleagues, and they said I shouldn't even be presenting this because it's so difficult to do. So we passed a referendum in 2017. Mm-hmm. So we have 3 years from July 23rd of 2017, which is the closing date, to allocate all of our $24.2 million. I set the budget for FY18 based on what the construction team told me that we're going to need cash for. Said, based on our design and our construction, our site preparations, this is when you're going to be paying contractors. Well, we didn't pay them like that. So the first year we've spent, $3 million, and I think I had budgeted something like 12 or 13. That's just because the work wasn't done yet, the invoices weren't in. So when you think of the referendum projects, you should really look at like a 3-year budget, and I just have to somehow identify where exactly we sit in that spend as of right now. So that's why if you look at FY20, it's $10.3 million. That won't be exactly accurate. That's just what I'm looking at as year-to-date spend to get us to the 24.2. So referendum spending is really...
it's almost like it should be a separate thing.
It shouldn't be part of a 1-year budget because it's not a 1-year budget. It's a 3-year project. So those, and that's why you'll see throughout this report, I try and even on like page 1, I pull referendum information out. So it's on its own down on the bottom.
Right.
It's on its own on the second tabulation. Just because it really skews the numbers. Looking forward to it being off our books here shortly in the next couple of years so that we don't have to have this in here because it really artificially skews the information.
Right, and it even messes up the projection software that you use, right? You get the really funky graph where it says, oh, it's always reserves, but it's not really reserves, it's the money that's sitting there.
It's better in that because I can fully expend it in 1 year, so I just plug in the $24.2 million and it goes away, whereas this is trailing over three, this is going to last 3 years. But other than that, at the central office, you know, the biggest budgets are, you know, the B&G budget. That's where there's a lot of school-based spending. I do have those account codes in here, but I'm still showing it at the CSO just because it's where it's managed. Dave manages those accounts, but you know, if you look at the account stream, you can see there's a lot of site improvement, building improvement, account codes with building codes referenced. One other ask you guys had was to put the history of legal spending in there. I populated that. It'll probably stand out like a sore thumb because it's the only one that. So on page 64, in the, you know, far right-hand column, you'll see it was 140 in FY17.
Oh,
so I have not gone through and researched all of the historical numbers. I just don't think it's worth the effort to do so. I don't know what value that brings, but. Legal is one that we could easily, I mean, I was able to find it and I put it in there.
Okay.
I did do, just as an FYI, I did, when I was doing that, I did our 11-year average, $140,000 on legal expenses.
Oh, really?
Year.
Okay. I was able to find it back to about 2013, whatever I could find online.
Yeah, we had a couple, the average is higher than that probably because we had a year for 225.
Yeah.
And this one is actually even... It's okay. Off because it shows us at 127 for FY19.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't paid June yet.
Right.
I cannot find a legal. Sorry.
Are you on page
64?
64.
And when you're looking at page 64, look at the far right-hand column. The only numbers are $140,000. That's legal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Contracted legal services.
Okay, gotcha.
So FY18.
FY18 was the highest. It was 227.
Yeah.
So we're at 127 right now, and we'll have probably another $20,000 or $30,000 from June, maybe more. It's a busy month.
And it doesn't mean that we didn't spend in some of these other categories. It's just that that
just
came out of a different bucket in 2017.
No, those are all zeros because we haven't gone through and I haven't researched the history on those.
Oh, okay.
So this is a document that started last year.
Got it.
Next year, all five columns will be populated.
Okay.
That's what we should do.
Okay.
I mean, I could go back and
it doesn't
data dive out of Skyward.
That's a lot.
I don't really want to.
That's a lot.
Get some information.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything else that really was.
I'm actually surprised that the year to date for the legal is as low as it is so far.
We were off to a heavy spend early, and I think we had a couple months in there where it tapered down a little bit.
Okay.
But then I think we spent a lot in the last couple months, so I don't know what our June invoice will be, but I suspect it will be a lot.
Yeah.
Any other things that jump out? Any questions?
Well, one of my questions is about how's enrollment looking, but I guess from a staffing point of view, it's looking like it's pretty stable, kind of similar to the last updated because we haven't added.
Yeah, so we're having space planning meetings with any building, with the principals of any buildings that have a bubble that we're watching. You know, and identifying how many kids do we need, you know, if we have a grade level that's close to hitting target, how many more kids do we need to enroll at that grade level, you know, where we're at or above target, and then what's plan A and plan B, because opening new classrooms is not an option anywhere. So I think something new that we've done this year, and it's just kind of a pet peeve of mine, is that if we're going to problem solve about buildings, let's get the principal in the room at the table. So we had one meeting yesterday, we're having another one tomorrow. So to have a plan A and plan B, and truthfully it's utilizing the co-teaching model, because space is an issue for us.
We don't have unoccupied classrooms.
Mm-mm. you know, so, and Dave was at the table, so he was able to add a ton of information about, well, we could turn this into our workroom, and, you know, that's the level that we're at,
right?
Of trying to space plan around some of these things. And, you know, some of the solutions are almost worse than having a couple more kids in a class, to be honest with you. You know, so that's where we've been talking with principals, you know, because you can hire a teacher to pull out during ELA or math, but the coming and going, I mean, it's a solution and it's done in other places who also don't have room to open in classrooms, but every solution has a pro and a con.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the space is an issue. I mean, we don't have anybody that's...
Ben Franklin would hire. That's probably still...
I mean, we've got a couple grade level that we're watching.
Yeah. See, I don't think we do, because I think we still need the class. You're probably talking about that structured classroom. I think we still need that classroom, so I don't think we have an open room there.
I thought, not related to that, but I thought there was one that's one room. That's what I remembered, but I can't
remember what
it was.
That would be the probably the owl hire.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone through Lincoln and Forest Glen with a comb. Like Forest Glen, obviously, we've talked about this. That's why we've had to divide one room this summer so that we can meet all the sections next year. And that's one school that does have a bubble room or bubble grade. And again, it might be better to hire more staff than to try and put kids in a closet, basically.
I mean, that's literally what we were like. How many adults can we cram into this office space?
Yeah.
And there's spaces that are square footage for three adults that
we have six
or seven in.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know if this is, no, not finance, but so when we're looking at the enrollment report with, you know, for each elementary school.
By grade.
And then grade and all that stuff. So when we see a number that doesn't reflect actual kids in that one classroom, like, say, Forest Glen, I'm just trying to understand, like, following what you guys are talking about. So let's say it says, like, I don't know, 25 in the classroom, but it doesn't mean they're 25 in the classroom all the time because there might be pull-out services.
Right, and we look at that, too. Like, how many kids are in there during core instruction? Are there a lot coming and go, you know? So that was part of the conversation that we had yesterday. You know,
yeah.
And so I think when we sent out like kindergarten and Forest Glen. I'm just making this up. 109 at the grade level. You know what I mean? And then there might be some deviation between number of kids in a room based on is there a co-teacher in there, or, you know, and then how many kids are coming and going. So yeah, when we have the space planning meeting with them, we're looking at all of it. And then they've been trying to update kids in the system, like new enrollments, and also kids that we know are dropping. And then we're dealing with some residency issues, too, that, you know, should mean a couple of kids less.
Yeah, so long-term-wise, we're at a kind of a high point, not much higher than we typically have been, certainly to the point where buildings are full, we're out of space. I mean, we don't have empty classrooms to easily solve these issues.
Right, and, you know, we don't see new construction that's going to have significant amount of kids, but it won't take a significant number to really throw us into a problem area. So when Eric met with the village and talked about some of the new developments, they're not anticipating it being families with kids, but if it's empty nesters that move in and those people are selling a home, the people who move into that home are going to have kids. So there is an impact. You know, there is the possibility to continue growing, and it never fails that they come in at the grade levels that are already your most crowded. You know, just seems like you never get a nice range of new kids coming in. They're all going to come in at fifth grade, or they're all going to come in at first grade.
My neighborhood, which I don't, so I think is a random representative sample. There's a whole bunch coming in there before preschool, so it's another couple of years away. family just moved in across the street from me, and she, they're expecting their first child in a few months.
Yep.
Right? So it's like all, our neighborhood is about 26 years old now when I first started it. And so many people now have,
over,
you know, their kids are now on a college, and the empty nesters are turning over all those houses. And
yeah, it's the same. My neighborhood's the same.
Right across Roosevelt, yeah.
I didn't know if we, next meeting date, I guess.
Yes.
I guess we need to discuss that. I mean, what's the next topic for this committee to address? And I think that drives when we would meet next. We haven't really had a conversation about what the, you know, month-to-month need is for this community, or this committee. Thoughts on that? I've had finance committee meetings quarterly, typically. You know, and you have them timed so that you meet to talk about the budget, you meet to talk about the levy, you meet to talk about, I think it was maybe the audit or staffing or open suggestions.
Right. That's kind of what I'm used to. I know the finance committee here let a lot go to finance advisory, so there's kind of that dual working, you know what I mean, which is a resource that a lot of other places don't have.
Right.
You know, it's just a matter of sorting out because it's a lot of time for board members.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have a lot of committees that you participate in here. Uh-huh. You know, so does quarterly meet the need?
Well, I mean, I think the idea was to have a FAC kind of take some of that workload, but I don't think we actually achieved that. I mean, we didn't never really talked about the budget. We never talked about the audit or levy. I mean, well, take that back, the levy, yes, but, you know. But I like the idea of quarterly, because I could think of already, you know, now it's budget, and then, so what is it, July? So 4 months later, November is levy meeting. And
yeah, so I think that makes sense, and then possibly just, you
then
know.
Then March is staff already.
You can always
right?
call other meetings. I mean, we don't have to, you know, like, unlike the board, we don't have to publish our 12-month meeting schedule.
Yeah.
Kind of do them as needed. But I am just thinking the next topic we would probably address would be related to probably the levy at the end of the year or the audit, one or the other.
Right.
Actually, now that I say that, it would probably be the audit, because it's my experience is that you would bring the audit to the finance committee, have them kind of pick through it, however you feel you like to do, and avoid the Monday evening, because it's really not a document that you can just pick up and look through and you know, have meaningful questions to.
Another thought I had was, I just like to kind of already know ahead of time. I know we don't have to publish, but I guess so I don't miss anything. But I know FAC had talked about kind of like a schedule. I think you were in that conversation too.
Just that cycle of what they would talk about during different times of the year.
Yes, yes. So it sounds like that's not really going to happen on the FAC level. So I don't know if we want to kind
it
of
might be
then
something that would
adopt
be
that.
Good fit
not
for
not
this committee.
All of it, but
yeah.
Just right. kind of pick through that list and still try to see if we could do quarterly meetings, but as needed.
Yeah, it might be nice if we identified a topic on that. The FAC seems more ad hoc in terms of
right.
Right. And obviously, and you know, we've talked about this before, we don't want them duplicating any of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
I think there's things just in the budget process that it makes sense.
Yeah.
To me, quarterly, just because of the timing of when and how things happen. You know, so maybe we start with quarterly, and, you know, if you hear something at any sessions that you go to at III that has some new ideas or anything, but that's typically,
yeah.
It's timed with what's happening in the budget cycle for the year.
Well, then why don't I put together kind of a draft cycle of what each quarterly meeting would address?
Yeah.
Kind of distribute that. We can
that'd be great.
Yeah, I was kind of
that because that's you know there's no need to recreate the wheel. I mean, this is
right.
The school districts do everywhere, so
right.
It's easy to do that. And we can take a look at that and give me me your feedback, see if it makes sense, and go.
Yeah. And if you want, like, let's see, I wrote, I think it was like February that we had talked about it with FAC, if you already just found that list in front of you. And then Paul had sent something in a Friday update, which I don't know if you get, but it was March 1st. If you want to kind of see that list. I didn't know if six, like right an hour before the board meeting would be best, because then maybe other board members could come if they're interested. Anyway, just opening.
That'd be fine with me. That's how it was historically. Not that that's to do things the way they used to.
They just have to know they can't participate, which sometimes is hard. You know what I mean? But they certainly can come attend and listen, because then they understand it to a better degree. We just, you know, and I'm only speaking from where I was at, we had our committees the hour before the board meeting,
right,
and we had to work really hard to not have everybody try to sit at the table and participate.
Right.
So, you know.
Scheduling-wise, for me, that's easier. I don't know how it is for you.
Yeah, it just seems more logical. It's the 2:30, but I guess during school year,
that was to get you out so you could pick up the kids at 3:30. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it was 2:15.
Two, yeah, I got to get out at 3:15. Yeah. Okay.